Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
Come on, CJ, you see me when I see you. Nigga, you ain't even make a move. So how the fuck when you see me, you gon' shoot? I don't know what I am in the booth.
He say he gon' jelly pop on my coffee.
Nigga, suck my dick like ain't nobody gon' spend hot sauce. God, hey, y'all jacking out with that friend. Like smoking on yellow, no one did it. And be love ain't still do shit. She get married, dumb ass got hit. That's why to my mother, they never did shit. Like smoking on Yui, butter, guado. Tell the bridge to pick up a stick. Like 3 days death, I got put in a split. They know I'm pretending he be on that shit. And I'm trying to pack me an OY. I still be searching for jiggies. Family first, so we see the flockers. And Charlie don't hit what I'm bitching. It's like how many dead niggas do y'all got? Three the guys that score like a rock. He jack watch cake and put in a box. I told Reba just let up some shine. No gonna go if you top. Like we got a million ops. So we need a million chops. So G's don't crash, we ain't stopping for cops. And they keep on dissing my block. Like who got touched, like who got shot. And I fell in love with my chop. And that's what a YG, we fucking y'all thought.
That's a bro, he get shot if he towing on Kelly. And I hope that I catch him with Kelly. Like Snoopin' on country,
shit out you by my bitch. Me and my bitch a jump a bitch. Beat the shit out you by my bitch. My bitch like skin bad as shit. Valentine's Day, send the cash at quick. Her last man smoke blame and shit.
Get me off the camera before I break your phone.
Beat your ass like Nate Bray Jerome. Pap called from jail, told him I'm doing shit. He like, what you mean? We doing shit. He like, where you at? I'm just doing shit. Glock, I flip a doom shit. Hollows taste good to an op. I said hollow taste like fruit loop. Put you in the mouth, it tastes like honeycomb. Kick you with my Timbs and feel like honeycomb. Ops chain look like maple trees. With that bronze on, you about to get a ring. Saw the first nigga had a black chain. Looked stupid with a painted chain. My goal was flat back over the cane. Dubai you went to was not the way. Q rich necklace got a sickle cell. Sit down, that's a necklace, not a chain. Little ass necklace choking yourself. You so damn broke, how you cope with yourself? You so damn
broken, so is your bitch.
My bitch got more money than nigga named Rich.
One eye with the glick like Slick Rick.
Bad wood got me looking like Danny Glover.
Bad wood got me looking like Fetty Wap.
Bad wood got me looking like Gary Coleman.
Bad wood got me feeling like Lil Darryl.
Feeling like Henry Ruggs in the Camaro.
Bad wood got my breath stinking in Beyonce.
Bad wood hitting like a world star fight.
Bad wood hit like a head-on-head collision.
Bad wood fucking up my 2020 vision.
Glock make an atheist out of Jehovah's Witness.
On black ice, I'm still ain't slipping.
Glock got me walking like with a bad hip.
They like, Neff, you just saying shit.
Get me the fuck off your playlist.
You don't wanna work, don't bump my music.
I kill a broke boy for bumping my music.
You leech your niggas, don't bump my music.
Your feet stink, don't bump my music.
If I was broke, I wouldn't even bump my music.
You don't wanna go to jail, don't bump my music.
You wanna live another day, bump my music.
You want your bitch fucked, bump my music.
You wanna lose your bitch, show her my music.
My music can make your mama sell crack.
Mixtape help grandma sell the perk pack.
Auntie like crack dreams, I like that.
EDM album, her brother like that.
They like, damn, nephew blacking on music.
I did more shit than Universal Studios.
Got more music than Motown Records.
Got songs in the cut they don't know about.
Got a verse with Michael Jackson in the cut.
I stole that shit from Air 51.
I see Donald Trump, I'm a piece of
had a dream Joe Biden was crip walking.
Saying uglier than Condoleezza Rice.
I might quit rapping and fuck a politician.
Terrorist act, blow up politician.
I feel like the Russian niggas in Boston.
The government brainwashed them.
They ain't wanna blow up everybody that was running.
Then they locked them up and tried to keep them quiet.
Free Eric Snowden and El Chapo.
I break them niggas out the feds.
Free everybody out the feds.
Area 51 got some shit, bring back the dead.
I got beef for Area 51.
They got kid for cancer over there.
They got good Zai over there.
They created Bola over there.
I know y'all ass somewhere in Colorado.
Y'all moved from Vegas, went to Colorado.
Utah somewhere in the middle of that country.
I'ma link up with Donald Trump and kill the country.
Christopher Columbus, did he see Area 51?
Everybody he was with was on drugs.
I feel like an Indian with a Newport.
Got more cigarettes than Indian reservation.
I got a tobacco farm across the street.
I got syndicates across the street.
My Indian homie got 30 marbles.
I'm just trying to suck dick for a pack of marbles.
My new wife pulled up with new boxes.
I'm for cutting shit out you in boxes.
These niggas trapped in the closet.
Only got one pair of jeans in their closet.
Boy, them jeans stale as a fuck.
Boy, you look like you still shop at Marshall.
You got me thinking Kmart still open.
The Under Armour shirt came from Dick's.
All y'all can go and eat a dick.
Business, Anthony. So I see you like the lights. Sorry, Simon. So could you more?
Because there's criminals, I don't lose my rights, I guess. Because there's grandmothers, I don't lose my rights. Answer the question. Do you know what the weapon used was?
Listen, let me ask you a question.
No.
I've got the FBI statistics that, the so-called semi-autos that you talk about.
Take a break. Let me come back.
Again, you're not going to get my guns.
Let me come back. Try and answer my question.
Yeah, all you're going to do is sit there and play little factoid questions.
All right, mahalo, everybody. Welcome to SlimeWire Podcast. This is episode 2849.
Baby. And a mahalo to you.
I am your host, Triton T2, joined, of course, by Ikemen Sensei. Ikemen Sensei, yes. How are you doing?
I'm feeling all right. I'm recovering from coronavirus and an ear infection and also heat exhaustion. So I'm getting myself back to health and feeling a-okay. I fell asleep at 5 a.m. last night. So that's kind
of fucked. I do that pretty frequently.
But one of my proudest accomplishments since coming to Japan was that I fixed my sleep schedule so that I usually almost always go to bed at 11 and get up at 7 now. But just a little bit, it's crazy how just a little bit of coronavirus can mess that all up.
I don't understand. Usually COVID makes you like really tired. And also you had COVID like a week and a half ago. How are you still did you get like, I feel like because Japan probably contained it better than America did, maybe you probably got one of the earlier, one of the more fucked up strains, maybe.
Oh, no. We're up to date. I got BA5. It was no big deal. But I was like out for like 5 days. But then I don't want to go at length of my various health problems. But I got coronavirus and then I got like a really fucked ear infection. And
you gotta tell me about this ear infection, because I also had problems with my ears following COVID, and I think this might just be a case of two different kinds of dudes, you know? Two different ways of dealing with problems. So I want
to
hear...
What you're trying to say is, I'm weak and you're strong, is what you're trying to say.
That's sort of part of it, but, like, I mean, tell me what your symptoms were, all, you know, we can compare.
I was clogged up in the depths of my lobes, and when I went to the ear doctor, he said, your shit is totally clogged up. It's in your inner cochlea, and it's probably why you're feeling dizzy, because it's all in your inner ear and it's making you dizzy because that's where your like balance organs are. So yeah, like I was basically okay. Like I recovered from coronavirus like 3 or 4 days after getting it, and then after that I got an ear infection, and then after that I was walking around and I got a little bit of like a heat stroke, heat exhaustion type thing. So it was just a case of compounding disease.
Okay, I see. But like, what were the symptoms of the ear infection?
Oh, I'm sorry. So just like my shit was all clogged up, my shit hurt. For the first couple days, my shit hurt real bad. And then I was just like dizzy. I just felt dizzy when I was walking around every day. And I felt dizzy when I had coronavirus, but I was just feeling dizzy.
Okay.
And when I went to the ear doctor, he said, yeah, that's because your shit is all clogged up in your inner ear. And that's where there's some kind of like organ in your inner ear.
It's just a direct ties to your brain. So it controls like, your balance and function and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I was dizzy too. You know, my ears hurt. My ears were all clogged up. And, you know, I just sort of dealt with it. I just sort of strong-manned myself through.
Look at me, Morgan. That's a strong man.
But, I also wanted to ask you, sorry to ask you about your COVID experience, but didn't they have you on, like, experimental Japanese drugs, too?
They had me on some crazy shit, which was called, like, the Japanese that was written on it, it was called, like, Malonol? Maronaru? Maronaru? Is that what it was?
I got it right here.
I was telling you not to take these pills.
Yeah, Katanaru. Katanaru. And the English version is Kalanol. And yeah, I feel like I might have done like some brain damage to my brain. So sorry if I'm a little slow today. Because I looked this shit up. And it was like, yeah, it's like a painkiller. And it also like directly taps into the part of your spinal cord that regulates your body temperature to lower your fever and to like reduce the effects of fever. This, that might just be what like regular ass like ibuprofen does, but I feel like, yeah, like 200 milligrams of this I took and I was just out. Like if I, like when I was really bad with COVID and I had to like sleep, all I would do is just take this pill and I would just be fucking done. And it's supposed to be a painkiller, but it also seems to be a sleep aid of some kind. So yeah, they had me on that. They also gave me these little packets of, like, crushed up pills. Like, pre-crushed pills.
Damn, did you snort them?
I think that might have been what I was supposed to do, but I took them orally.
Okay.
Yeah.
You put them, like, in water like packets. Molly?
Yeah, exactly. That's like exactly, you're supposed to do something like that. And she told me to take one like in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one in the evening. And I was like, what is it? Like, what is this? And she was like, just take it when you feel bad. And I was like, all right. And yeah, so I was taking that and I was taking these other pills. And my God, yeah, I was a wreck. I was sleeping 18, 19 hours a day, and that has directly led into my fucked up sleep schedule that I got right now.
Okay.
So yeah, taking strange Japanese medication, I don't recommend it.
Okay, I have one more question, then we can get off this topic. But like, I remember early on in the show, you were discussing about how you'd never wanted to get COVID because as a foreigner, yeah, you were afraid that you would be discriminated against in the health system over there.
Yes.
So yeah, how was their treatment of you at the hospital?
Was I discriminated against? Oh, no, I wasn't discriminated against. I was kept in a room for like an hour to wait.
That's pretty
while normal. While they prepared my shit. In Japan, you can't get a PCR test, or you can get a PCR test, but they're like $80, and you gotta order them from the government. It's a big fucked up thing. I guess you can get them at a medicine store now, but they're still like $30-$40. They're expensive, and they're frustrating. So I just went to the clinic, and they just, they stuck some shit up my nose. The ladies, you know, the old ladies that were taking care of me were all very... they're very kind. I think I was lucky that I got old ladies, because old ladies are usually like the least racist Japanese people. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
No, I didn't experience any troubles with the Japanese health system. Although I did, while I was under quarantine, I was like I would go out to like take like walks in the evening, because you're allowed to take, I guess, at least in America, right? If you're on quarantine, you're allowed to take a walk as long as you know you're not going to interact with anybody, right?
I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, you're allowed to do anything, but...
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, one night my landlord called me and was like, have you been, like, taking walks? You're supposed to be on quarantine, right?
How come he knew that you had COVID?
Dude, because he fucking... So the Japanese government contacted my employer, and then my employer gave them my information, and then the Japanese government gave my information to the landlords.
That's fucking weird.
Yeah, it was wild. They just needed to know, I guess. And then somebody snitched on me that I was walking around. And all of the people that live in my building, I'm pretty sure, I feel like some of them know. I went to get in the elevator, and this really destitute looking old man whose like back is broken and he walks at like a 45 degree angle. You see a lot of those guys out here in Japan. I walked to get into the elevator and he's like, oh, wait. No, I'm actually going down. I'm going to the second floor. Are you going? If you're not going to the second floor too, you should maybe just take the stairs. And I was like, all right. And I think he was trying to avoid being in a small enclosed space with me because he knew I had coronavirus. At least that's how I interpret it.
That's pretty lit.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I have another thing I wanted to ask before we get into the real meat. Do you really think that that guy hasn't eaten in 6 days?
Oh, that guy?
Yeah, guy
that we know.
That Portland staple.
Yeah, anybody who lives in Portland, you know the big fat guy? Yeah, we're taking bets. You know the big fat guy that we're talking about. We're taking bets on whether, on how much food he's eaten in the last week.
Six days.
My bet is a lot.
Yeah, I really highly doubt that he, as he said, that he hasn't eaten in 6 days. I definitely showed it to you, but that the typo of his like art project that made it into the art museum, they kept the typo because...
Yes. A misplaced comma is just a fucking unforgivable death sentence, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so the backstory on this is very funny. He put a very obvious typo in the title of his art project, and somebody just, I mean, I imagine somebody was just trying to help, was just like, hey, you know, there's a typo in here, and then he got very upset, went on a tirade, said they were gaslighting him, said the typo was in artistic decision, which didn't make any sense. And because this guy is such a staple of the city of Portland, he got his work featured in the Portland Art Museum, typo and all. So, and like, I just saw that it was there and I was like, okay, is it gonna be there? And I read the whole thing and it's like at the bottom of the paragraph, like they're like trying to hide it. They're the official title of the work. But I thought that was really funny.
I mean, like, no matter whether he hasn't eaten in 6 days, he's definitely eaten for 6 days at some point in time, and it's still there, you know? Like, he's eaten for 6 days in 3 hours when he was 17.
And it never left.
Yeah. It's still around. It's still hanging around there.
It never got burned off. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You ate for 6 days at some point in time.
Yeah. And you still got reserves, buddy. So.
Yeah. It's no big deal. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. So the meat of what we're talking about today, we're going to be talking about...
Yes, let's get to the meat.
We're going to be talking about Vaporwave. Is Vaporwave dead? And what is post-Vaporwave? So, So George Clanton, everybody knows George Clanton is probably... I would say he's the person that has profited off of Vaporwave more than anybody else. Probably.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that's safe to assume that. I don't know.
I mean, when you say profits, do you mean actual monetary profits?
Yeah, I mean monetary profit.
Okay, yeah. Pure bucks. Pure cash. Cold hard cash. I guess I don't know if that's true, but I feel like just in terms of converting his Vaporwave popularity into a post-Vaporwave career, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd say he has the strongest. I mean, the only other person I think that, like, you could maybe HKE during the 2814, like, when that was really big, that's possible.
Yeah.
Or maybe somebody that runs one of these, like, massive vinyl labels now, maybe has profited more. But I highly doubt it.
In terms of an artistic career, I think he's curried the most favor and converted yeah, converted his start in Vaporwave into the biggest career. Maybe, what about Cherry Pepsi?
Oh, Skylar Spence?
Skylar Spence, yeah. I feel like he bailed and he tried to do a post-Vaporwave career early on to some success.
True, but I mean, what level of success was that? I don't know. I feel like George Clanton, like if you compared like followers on like Twitter, or I think it'd be pretty easy to look up like Spotify statistics, and I bet that George Clanton is beating him there. But I don't know, and I'm too lazy.
By the way,
to do
in
that.
Terms of pure clout, fame, and reputation, yes, no question.
Yeah. So I mean, so the point I'm getting at is that when people say that Vaporwave is dead, and many people are saying this. I'm one of them myself.
Yeah. I've been hearing this.
Yeah, I've been hearing it. I'm also saying make Vaporwave great again. Many people are also saying that. But it would make people sense that George Clanton would want to, like, that he would not have a problem. Well, he would have a problem with that sentiment, and he would want to, he would disagree with that, and it would make sense. And he rarely brings up like his own personal opinions about Vaporwave on Twitter or anywhere else, but something somebody said, or maybe the amount of people that have been saying that Vaporwave is dead recently, or maybe he has his ears tuned into this little podcast of ours, maybe something set him off to where he decided he wanted to say something about the state of Vaporwave. And he very well might listen to the podcast. He used to follow me on Instagram, he doesn't anymore, but way back, like in 2015, he was like following me on this.
Okay.
But so he made this tweet, and I'm gonna play it for you. Okay, are you ready?
In 2015, people complained that Vaporwave was out of ideas and too mainstream. Now it's remembered fondly. Even in 2012, Vaporwave is dead. I was there. If you think Vaporwave is dead in 2022, you're just getting older. Like how your parents listen to the same CD every road trip. People new to the genre have a right to enjoy it. If you gave a problem, let the young ones have their fun. Electronic M3 already has twice the amount of attendees as Electronicon 1. And it was designed, with love, to showcase Vaporwave to a whole new audience as well.
Okay, so that's it.
Yeah.
Alright, do you have any initial thoughts?
Yeah, well, first off, where is it written that young people have this so-called right to enjoy Vaporwave as well? I don't think that there's anything set in stone that allows that. And I was talking to you, I think that Vaporwave and the Vaporwave scene in general, much like all other digital media in the 21st century, it is going to exist for eternity and is going to crop up every 20 years or so. I mean, now we lived through the birth of it, right? But it will soon, in like 20, 30 years, it'll be revived as a retro thing, just like everything is now. And so it'll never really be dead and it'll never really be alive. I think the problem is that it's cringe and lame now. And that's a much worse death sentence than calling it dead, calling the scene dead. I think that it's just part of the digital media landscape that music, content never really dies now. It just gets interacted with more or less. It is relevant to a cultural zeitgeist more or less that goes so fast now that it's hard to tell when it starts or ends. So I think that, like, what he's saying is not necessarily false, but I think Vaporwave is, it's worse than dead now. It's cringe.
Yeah, I don't...
It's the true death of Vaporwave. It's alive, but it is very cringe now. So that would be my response.
I don't have a problem with anything that he's saying here, and I think what he's saying is, like, well-intentioned, and I think he is a pretty well-intentioned person. I think it is important to, like, make the point that, yes, he is the one that would be incentivized to, like, he has the incentive to create, to make Vaporwave, like, fuck. It makes sense that he would want everyone to believe that Vaporwave is still alive, or, like, the Vaporwave isn't dead to him because it has helped him in his career so much, if that makes sense.
He has something to gain, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I was talking, I think we were talking, like, a little bit last week about the music culture of the early 2010s. And, like, that's the the era that Vaporwave was born in. And I was saying that I think that that is the most important, or maybe the best era for, like, independent music that has ever happened and ever will happen. And everything that happened, like, algorithmically to the distribution and the consumption of media and culture and music specifically, has only gotten worse, and it's, like, never going to get better. There will never be that sweet spot where millennials have enough know-how about the internet to create and distribute things illegally, and to, like, download music illegally, to have, like, such a large range of influence. And I think that's a very important point when discussing, like, the lifeline of Vaporwave. Because when you're talking about, like, the young kids getting into Vaporwave now, the simple fact of the matter is that they are not getting into the Vaporwave that we were, like, getting into. And they'll never be able to again, because the way of consuming music has changed so much since then.
Yes. I would agree, and I would say that young people today that may be getting into Vaporwave are, they're entering a media landscape that has come under the control of big corporations, and the originally Vaporwave came up, and I think that you are right about the fact that the early 2010s was this sweet spot after the kind of the communicative potential of, like, the internet had been established and could and existed, but before it had been regulated and controlled, where people could just fucking post some shit onto SoundCloud, onto Bandcamp, and there was a community of people that just the distribution system, like, those artists could, early Vaporwave artists could post albums for free and then find other ways of getting monetized other than selling their albums. So yeah, I do think that that mix of early 2010s of that media landscape was a very fertile ground for a new generation of musicians. And I do worry about the youth who are going to be consuming Vaporwave moving forward. And
yeah, I think another part of this, like, early 2010s theory that I'm trying to build is that, like, not only is it the media landscape of that time, it's also the generational, like, aspect. Like, the fact that millennials were still young during that time. And millennials, as a generation, are unique in that we grew up with the internet, but we grew up, like, knowing more about it than we knew more about it than Generation X. But Zoomers don't know as much about it as millennials, because Zoomers grew up with iPads, and, like, they grew up with, like, media being, you know, so, like, centered and directed towards them. Whereas millennials we had to, like, go on YouTube and find movies in, like, you know, 9 parts or whatever, and, like, figure out how to use Napster and LimeWire.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Figure out how to torrent.
Our knowledge of the internet is conscious, whereas theirs is unconscious, and they're not even aware of what they know. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and so So, what is Vaporwave now? If Vaporwave is not dead, but it is cringe, is there another term we could use for Vaporwave? coming out now?
Well, I feel like it's the big story that we're living through right now in the vaporwave scene is the splintering of vaporwave from one big tent with various subgenres into a bunch of smaller genres that no longer think of themselves as having anything to do with one another, you know? So, like, if you listen to Dream Punk and, I don't know, Signal Wave and fucking...
Barber Beats.
I think that if you listen to those, if you listen to what people are saying on the internet about those various genres, I don't really think that most of them think of those three disparate sounds as being related to one another. I think they're fundamentally different. And they're fundamentally different scenes, and they're different sounds. And listening to them, I can trace some of the genetics of, like, say, Dream Punk back to tendencies in early Vaporwave that were coming out mostly on Dream Catalog, obviously. But, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's all completely fragmented, and there is no unifying sound. There's no unifying thing that we could call all of these various post-Vaporwaves.
Well, I mean, that's been a thing since the beginning. Like, I don't think Vaporwave has ever really had, like, a unifying sound. I think the thing that unified Vaporwave the most was its attitude towards copyright and the attitude towards, like, stealing aesthetics and samples and stuff. Which, you know, I would argue is, like, a political ideology, but I don't think that's the case anymore. And there's a great essay that came out by this guy, Van Pogum. I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah.
I sent this to you. It was called The Terrifying Rise of Post-Vaporwave. So I'm going to play a little section from this. So,
okay.
All right.
Go.
In contrast to old vaporwave that mostly mocked and parodied consumer culture, post-vaporwave celebrates capitalism with feigned naivete, secretly priding itself on how well it can mask its greed, ambition, and turpitude with trite simulacrum merely to impress on an observer. I mean, come on, no one actually believes you enjoy looking like a Lisa Frank knockoff plastic dolphin from China that got left in the sun for too long and listens to music equally as slow. This new paradigm created by post-vaporwavers gleefully perpetuates the dystopian reality that it once subtly cautioned against. At one point in time, let's say 2011, the genre was dripping with sincerity and curious flirtation with the potential for a new age punk mentality. Vaporwave would go on to collapse on itself by becoming quasi-popular on social networks, inevitably devolving into its lowest common denominators to keep its repetitious, slow-down droning easy to communicate to others, like a peacock but without self-awareness. To put it simply, post-vaporwave is popular because it's easy to classify now, whereas vaporwave at its start was not as easily put into a box. It went from being "is this vaporwave?" to "this is vaporwave."
All right, and that is a contrast to what you said earlier about the splintering of subgenres of, like, signal wave, broken transmission, dream punk. So I think this post-vaporwave concept is mostly referring to the George Clanton scene. I think it could even, like, grow into, like, the Death's Dynamic Shroud scene and the whole scene like, sort of vaporwave super fans on Twitter. And, like, I don't know if you, like, go to, like, Bandcamp and look at, like, the most recent, like, popular vaporwave albums, a lot of them share a very distinct art style now. And I think the reason that that is because, it became very normal to, hire artists to make art for you. And there's only, a handful of, vaporwave artists, people that specifically create artwork for vaporwave albums. And so people are just choosing from this pool of like maybe 4 to 5 people, and all of their art is like really similar. And I think it's all sort of bad. I think like go to like My Pet Flamingo had releases a lot of old stuff, but like there's like specific labels I could think of if I had time. But like if you go there and you like look at every album, it's like, you know, it'll have the Roman bust and it'll have like the palm trees, but it's sort of like got this more like internet sheen, like smoother sheen on it that you can tell was made with like some, you know, some sort of Adobe program, which like looks good in theory, like when you just look at it, but when you compare it to all of the other albums, it like loses in appeal. And like, so if like, if by contrast you look at something like the Vaporwave Essentials Guide, which I believe was made in 2015, which only has albums from 2010 to 2014, the art style is a lot more varied. And like, you know, you'll have albums where the cover is just like a random screen grab from a movie or a commercial blown up way bigger than it was ever supposed to be blown up, or like, and so like the artwork is worse. Like, it's not as, like, visually appealing, but it is, like, much more intellectually appealing and, like, interesting, in my opinion. So, so I think when...
It reflects an more honest, internet aesthetic of, like, what you were saying, like, blown up TV show screens that leave, like, artifacting, so the quality is, like, glossy. Yeah, like, that's, like, that evokes a very specific emotion in somebody that has been on the web for a long time. Yeah, I do agree with that.
Yeah, so, like, I think that's the difference between, like, the older era of Vaporwave that this guy in this essay is talking about and the newer post-Vaporwave that he's also talking about. Do you have any thoughts about that essay in general?
I was inclined to not like this guy because I actually read one of his, a long time ago, I read one of, another article that he wrote, that was about how he single-handedly started the, city pop craze in the United States.
Oh, yeah. I recall that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he describes the scene where he tried to, traditionally... to receive a Japanese guy's business card in the traditional manner, and then he dropped it on the ground, and it, which, you know, is obviously a grave rudeness that he committed. But that scene that he described was so cringe, so cringe to me that he really lost a lot of credibility points with me with that, with that article. But it was very interesting, and I do think that this article does make some good points about, especially, that last line where it's like, it went from being, is this Vaporwave, to this is Vaporwave. Yeah, I think that's true, and he's, I think that he's, the idea that it Vaporwave is now overly formatted, overly, what do you want to call it? Identifiable?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it has become too much of a recognizable thing, and that is why it is now losing its artistic interest. I think that is true. When people talk about, like, anybody who says that the Vaporwave scene is, like, too capitalist, I don't know. I don't really agree with that, in the sense that we've talked about this on the podcast before, but it's like people that are like swapping, people that are setting up like tape shops, online vaporwave vinyl record stores, and like tape labels and shit, that's not really, I mean, like, you're making money, but I would not say that that guy is like a capitalist, you know? Like, you're still just a guy, you probably have a side job. You know, like, it's not exactly... I think people make too big of a deal about the profit-seeking aspects of vaporwave as it's got popular. Just because I can't, I still don't admit, like, sure, like, maybe people make, like, $10,000, $20,000 a year from these tape labels, but it's not that much money.
Some people, so, like, yeah, live solely off of, like, these labels and stuff. A small minority. I recently, there was this, this is, like, a really weird thing that I saw. There's this compilation that happens every year by this label called Doom Trip, and they do a compilation every year. It's called Doom Mix, and I guess it's, like, I've never listened to them, but I guess they're very popular compilations. So this one was 10 tracks, like 10 tracks, and there was a crowdfunded vinyl campaign for it that raised $5,000.
Damn.
Yeah. And I saw that and I was like, you, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's another thing that, like, yeah, the monetized aspect of this, of Vaporwave, I've never really put that much of a, I've never thought much of it. I've never thought it was very important, but I think, like, the other thing that I usually think about in terms of that is that the people that are spending money on this shit are, like, 30 to 35 year old dudes that now have, like,
giant record collections and stuff.
Big record, they have disposable income and they can spend money on shit that they liked when they were kids, you know. That's how it always goes. But, like, you know, if you are really in the business of making money as a media, selling media, then you have to go for kids. You have to go for what the young people are listening to, and I just don't see a lot of young people spending that much money on this type of shit. But I guess, I guess I could be wrong. But yeah, I do think that he does make a good point about how, yeah, how Vaporwave became too recognizable, too much of an identity, too branded, and has collapsed under its own weight. I think that is true.
Yeah, I just, earlier this week, I think, I, like, had a tweet about all of the, like, if you go onto the Spotify Vaporwave playlist, a lot of, like, old artists have changed the track titles of their songs to, like, where, like, originally they had, like, kanji and, like, you know, strange letters.
Yeah,
and
Japanese and Korean lettering.
Yeah, yeah, strange, like, and it's like, literally, it's old artists changing their old track titles to be more, like, searchable on Spotify, and about how I thought that was really sad and really, like, shitty. And the only person that, like, commented on it and said that I had a shit take, I, like, clicked on their profile. It was, like, a 15-year-old. So,
really?
Yeah. So there are, like, some young people that are really into this scene, which is interesting to me, which I wasn't aware of, I don't think.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess that reaches back around to, like, you know, claiming that Vaporwave is, has become too branded, too recognizable, and too formulaic. That might be true, but I still, like, I think what the conclusion that I'm reaching right now is, I don't know what that 15-year-old would define as being Vaporwave. I have no idea what he thinks Vaporwave is. I know it certainly isn't what I thought it was. So, you know, maybe George Clanton has a point.
Yeah, I'm not mad at anybody, but and I'm not mad at George Clanton. I fuck with George Clanton. I'm trying to think what else I had to say about that article, or what else I was talking about Vaporwave in general. Oh, this is another thing that has been happening recently in Vaporwave is there's artists that, again, in the like way like, in their endeavors to profit off of Vaporwave and create more, like, standard careers for themselves, there's artists that are, like, doing a Kanye West thing where they are actually clearing their samples before they use
them. I see.
And I said on Twitter that I respect the hustle, but that it's profoundly non-Vaporwave. It's not countercultural or transgressive.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and like, once again, I don't, like, I just, I guess I am I've been left in the dust. I'm confused because I don't understand in what sense having sample-based music where you clear your samples, even if it has a kind of vaporwave-y vibe, a kind of slowed-down 80s-style vibe, yeah, that just, to me, that just is categorically not, like, vaporwave. That's just, I don't know, yeah, like, sample-based music.
That's just so music, right?
Yeah, it's just music.
Yeah, like...
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, vaporwave, like, I think sort of transcended, like, the concept of, like, the music industry and of music culture, and like, you know, it transcended like the concept of albums, because like vaporwave albums are basically like mixtapes, you know, where you just you like literally affect the sounds, but you like change the title and you change the artist name and stuff. It's like the most pure version of like a mixtape. It's not really like an album. And
yeah
so I mean, vaporwave like transcended all of that, and that's like the whole point of why I ever thought it was interesting. So it's just like, it's interesting that it's bigger now than it's ever been, but the way that it got there was by sort of abandoning all of those original concepts and ideas that made it interesting in the first place, and now it's just regular music.
Yeah, and I guess I just I have to come hat in hand as a humble and confused old man and ask, like, what differentiates a vaporwave aesthetic and vaporwave music from all other aesthetics and music that are on the internet right now or that are popular now? Because it seems like there's, like, really nothing unique about that sound that would differentiate it from anything else. You know?
Yeah, definitely. It's not like you can't differentiate it from like synthwave, chillwave, in many cases indie pop if they're like just singing over original production, you know?
Exactly. I mean, this point, I've been trying to hammer this point home over the course of this podcast. But yeah, like, chillwave took this route in 2008 through 2011. Like, chillwave tapped the lo-fi versions of classic 80s songs a long time ago. So I don't really know, I just don't know what would differentiate vaporwave now from any of that stuff, or any of the legacy of that stuff that has trickled into popular music today.
Do you think there's anything happening in music right now that is as countercultural or transgressive as vaporwave was?
I think that, I'm a stand for like the very early hyperpop that came out, like Sophie and Dorian Electra was really good, and like that stuff was really great. I don't think there's anything that really excites me today. I wouldn't say anything.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything. I think there's like arguments you can make for like SoundCloud rap originally, like how unsanctioned it was, and how like, I mean, largely like it was really popular, but it was also incredibly unpopular. Like, there's like tons of people that hated it with passion, you know?
Hated, yeah.
And I think there are arguments you could make with like drill rap happening right now, where every single like big artist in drill is like facing multiple cases and like in and out of jail, and like they're like actually street people, whereas like existed in rap, but like usually the biggest rap stars weren't that, or they stopped being that once they got famous. But a lot of these drill rappers seem to never stop doing that. Which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, but there isn't a one new sound. There isn't like a new sonic palette that is accompanying those drill rappers, right?
Well, like, that's true. But like the other thing is that with that and with the SoundCloud rap, the goal of those things is to like make it in the traditional music industry. Like, that's the goal of that music and those artists. Whereas the original Vaporwave, like the goal of original Vaporwave was specifically to not make it in the traditional music industry, which is why people stole music and, you know, which is why they put the track titles in unsearchable, like, characters and worked under pseudonyms and aliases, you know.
Yeah, I do understand that, but yeah, I would say there is definitely no equivalent today of what that was. But maybe, you know what? Like, if there is, we might just not know about it.
Yeah, that's true. We might just not
be aware. Just be a 15-year-old, and we will only know once those 15-year-olds that are making it right now come up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hurry up. That's my message to them. Hurry the fuck up, because, yeah, it sucks now.
Yeah, everything sucks. There's a label I've been listening to a lot, actually, that's pretty good.
Yeah?
I'll tell you about it. Why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back. Yes. I'm going to tell you about that label, and then we're going to talk about that new Internet Club album. And I want to talk to you about the Alex Jones documentary, which you didn't get to see.
Absolutely. Yeah. Give me your thoughts on that.
All right. Okay, we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Oh, I'm back.
All right, we're back. So, that label I wanted to talk to you about is a label called Dismiss Yourself, which we referenced on an episode of the podcast because it had HKE's Nothing Culture on it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I was looking at, like, it had like, a Viper album on it, and it had, like, an RX Poppy album on it. And then I learned, like, more about Yeah, I learned more about this label. It's actually really cool. They, like, sort of started the, do you know about the, like, Hexed sound? The Hexed glitch trap thing?
No, I don't know. Specifically, I don't know about Hex.
Hexed, I'm not sure about Hexed. H-E-X-D. So there was, like, this rap group called Reptilian Club Boys, and they dropped, like, I don't know what it was called, but it's, like, a 20-minute, like, little EP thing. And then some anonymous producer, like, bit crushed it and made it sound, like, really cool and, like, crazy, and they called it Hexed. And then that became, like, a big thing of, like, Hexed, like, glitch trap little EPs. They're all specifically like between like 17 and 22 minutes because that's the specific amount of time it's supposed to take to like smoke a joint or have a chill smoke sesh with your bros. So you put that on. So yeah, it's like it's really conceptual and really cool. And yeah, this label like started that shit. And they've got like a really crazy YouTube channel because they started out as a YouTube channel before they branched out into being a label on Bandcamp. So if you just go to the Dismiss Yourself YouTube and click around, it's just like full of like really crazy like little releases. It's really cool. And I also want to shout them out because the guy that runs that label has been curating and archiving a thing that I've used for years and I had no idea it was him, but it's like a constantly updating mega folder of Space Ghost Perp's entire discography. Nice. And like Space Ghost Perp famously like will drop projects under aliases and delete them and like drop random singles here and there and just delete them and everything will get like deleted after a while and then he'll make like a bunch of new accounts for stuff and like so it's like really hard to like get a handle on his discography but like this guy operates this constantly updating mega folder of all of Space Ghost Perp's stuff, which I've used like tons of times to find like old Space Ghost Perp tracks.
Yeah.
So shouts out Dismiss Yourself. I think I know that HKE's been shouting them out too recently, saying that they're the coolest label of the 2020s. And I think he might be right at this moment.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through this and I'm liking what I'm seeing here. I will definitely give this a little bit of attention.
Yeah, I'll say the latest album they put out, I didn't really fuck with that hard. I thought it was kind of whack, but they've got a whole bunch of like really cool shit.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so besides that, I told you to listen to that new Internet Club album. Did you listen to that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, just give me your thoughts on it.
Yeah, so, like, I really appreciate the, first, the general, the aesthetics of the album. I really liked the, like, weird, like, clip art album cover.
Oh, yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah, yeah, and I, looking through, like, Internet Club's, all of his other releases, it is this interesting, like, kind of like an alternative, like, vision of what aesthetics for Vaporwave could have been if the Japanese shit didn't, like, pop off, and they just, and it was just more interested in, like, regular old internet aesthetics, you know? Yeah. I really liked that. And, yeah, I, once again, this is another one of those albums that's a real sweet spot between, like, ambient and, yeah, I guess it's, like, it's very light ambient where it's not these big soundscapes, but it's also not, like, it's not music that's supposed to get you, like, pumped up. It is supposed to be, like, background music, you know? And yeah, it was a real good sweet spot for me in that regard. And yeah, I just thought that they nailed this kind of, yeah, like, lossy aesthetic that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. I thought it was cool. I fuck with Internet Club because he's like a former 4chan guy. He used to post on Mew with a trip code in, like, Vaporwave threads, like, back in the day. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, back then, I guess still now 4chan's, like, super edgy and, like, you know, transphobic, and Internet Club would get on with his trip code and, like, defend Vectroid for being trans to, like, all the 4chan people that were, like, calling her a tranny and stuff, which is fucked up. So, but, like, yeah, shouts out Internet Club. He's super cool. I remember in the, like, original Wasex documentary, Internet Club was the example that he used of, like, when Vaporwave first started gaining, like, an anti-capitalist aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because his, like, earlier albums are called, like, Redefining the Workplace and, like, and stuff like that. And, like, he made, like, music videos with, like, commercials and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, so Internet Club's pretty cool.
Yeah, I liked it. It wasn't, like, it didn't, you know, totally fucking blow my mind or anything. But, I thought it was pretty good.
I like his older albums more. I really like the one called Redefining the Workplace. The, like, there's, like, a track on there where, what's it called? What are the two different sides of the headphones called when an album is mixed like that? Is that mono or stereo?
Oh. What the fuck is that? God damn it. Phase.
It's either mono or stereo, like when it's.
Oh, stereo.
Yeah,
stereo.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, he has a track on there where it constantly buzzes from one ear over to the next, and it's, like, really fucking creepy and, like, weird. And it's also just, like, this buzzing sound, like, but yeah, it's really, really cool. Shout out to that.
Yeah.
There was no other good music that came out recently. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, well, we're not sorry. Do better, okay? Make some more shit so we can tell you what we think about it, all right?
Yeah.
And, it's not that hard. You just slow down some fucking 80s samples, okay?
Yeah, it's really not
Get hard. On it.
You just have to find good ones.
Yeah.
I made a track with, I sampled, a Def Leppard song. It's pretty fire.
Oh, hell yeah. Did you put it up on your Twitter page?
No. I'm still working on it.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I've been liking the soundboards you've been putting out for these episodes.
Oh, they're stupid fire. It's I'm having so much fun making them. But
yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing what people submit to the SlimeWire record label.
Yeah, we're hoping to get some releases here soon. I have to contact some people. But,
hell yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you didn't watch the Alex Jones documentary because you're in Japan and it's not available in your country?
locked in Japan. Yes, they don't want the truth getting out around here.
You should get a VPN. You should watch it. You should find some way to pirate it.
I've been wanting to get a VPN for other reasons. So, I think I will get a VPN pretty soon here.
Do you care to explain your reasons for why you need a VPN living in Japan?
No.
What sort of things specific to Japan, wouldn't there be a reason that you need it?
Just content,
Unmediated.
Unmediated content.
Unpixelated content.
Yes, that would be it. That would be right up the alley. I mean, I haven't gotten in trouble for anything yet, but I do worry.
So that Alex Jones documentary was pretty good. It's not, honestly, it's not as good as I thought it was going to be. And like halfway through when I texted you, like, bruh, it's lit. It's like by the end of it, it didn't really like go anywhere, I felt.
You were trying to drum up interest because I correctly assessed that it would be not a good documentary. And
Did you correctly assess this?
I said, no, fuck that. I said, fuck that. I don't want to pay any money for it.
Oh, well, I guess that's fine. But, I mean, I guess basically, like, it just sort of didn't, like, I felt like it didn't, like, know what it was trying to do. Like, it could have been, like, a thing that explained Alex Jones, like, ideology, but it didn't really do that. I mean, is impossible to do because his ideology is so incredibly inconsistent.
Yeah.
And then
so it was just like it was like a biopic about him.
Well, that's the other thing is that it could have also been like a biography, like a biopic, but it wasn't really that either. I mean, there were like elements of that, and also they didn't have really any good interviews with anybody that like was around him like in the early years besides like a couple people. So it was like it tried to do both of these things but failed at both of them. And then
gotcha.
But there are like some cool like scenes. Like one thing that I didn't know is that he's like a Bush did 9/11 guy, and he was that as the towers were falling. So like he's doing, he's like a morning radio host, and like 9/11 is happening, and he's immediately on the radio saying this is a false flag. And
you know what I think?
Yeah, he's saying
I got a little hunch here.
He's saying this is a false flag. He literally said those towers look like they imploded. It doesn't look like a plane hit them, and it looks and like they're just going to use this so that we go to war in the Middle East. He was saying that on September 11th, 2001.
Goddamn,
which pretty fucking based.
He's a master conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, he's the best.
He's like a fucking, like, he is a absolute legend. The Mozart. He can just fucking pop it off the dome. He had it already ready to go as soon as it happened.
Yeah, it's insane. So it's like...
That's incredible.
At one point, is he controlled opposition? Like, does the deep state know about him? Do they tell him that they're going to do these things? And then he gets up and says exactly what they want to say? I don't know. And I don't really care because I just love him.
I mean, there's no way. I think that, like, he is definitely a human.
Oh,
he's no lizard. He's not a lizard. He is all man, 100% man. But he might be getting psyoped by, like, the FBI direct messaging him, pretending to be his ex-wife and telling him about stuff. I could see that.
Yeah, there's another like really good scene where it's like Biden's State of the Union or like immediately after his inauguration. Like January like 7th or whatever. And like he's just playing it and like he just can't stop himself from interjecting every few seconds, but he's not like angry. He's just like, this is the worst president we've ever fucking had. Yeah, he's a demon. Like, and he's just so matter of fact about it. And like, he's not even like, he's just like looking down and like shaking his head. Like, you really get the sense that he like truly is like, just like, he's just at a loss. Destitute. He doesn't know what to do anymore. And that is like another one of the themes that the documentary hits hard is like, because they have current interviews with him. Like, they interviewed him for the documentary. And the main thing that he's saying the entire time is like, we're completely fucked. Like, I know how bad it is, and like, it's going to get way worse before it gets better. And I don't know what to tell people anymore. Like, he has no hope for the future. He's like completely blackpilled at some point. And it's like, it's really sad. At one point he like breaks down crying, and he's like,
Jesus.
Yeah. And he says like, he says, I don't want to do this, but God told me I have to. And he's like crying and yeah, wiping his tears. It's fucked up. And and then like the crux, like the climax of the movie is the January 6th insurrection. And it shows you, so like, the documentary filmmaker was with Alex Jones when that happened. And it shows you like what the media did not show at all. Cause you know, they painted him as like an instigator of the riot, but like, it's like very clear footage of him on a megaphone trying to direct people away from the riot. And he's saying like, we need to move to the other side because we're not BLM. We're not the left. You know, people are over there. Yeah. There's random rioters over there. We're not a part of them. And so, yeah, it is like the ending is powerful because it like clearly shows how much misinformation there is about him. And that at the end of the day, he like was trying to stop the riot, and that like isn't what he wanted to happen. And it's sort of a bombshell, but I think like the cultural controversy that this is going to like create is going to overshadow any actual discourse about whether or not the documentary is good or bad, or
I see, just because it has that little nugget in it.
Well, I mean, just because, well, I don't think any, like, for that's the very end of the movie, I think like any like big Hollywood reviewer, if they are even going to review the movie, isn't even going to get that far. Like, they're not like they're not going to get that far, or if they do, they're just going to ignore it and assume that most people aren't going to get that far, or by the end they'll be checked out. And I don't think they're going to paint it. They're just going to say that it's a fluff piece and that it's bad because it's a fluff piece. And it sort of is like a fluff piece, but like, you know, I walked at the end of the day, I walked away from it only liking Alex Jones more than I already previously
did. I mean, so, the idea that Alex Jones is kind of this, at the end, he's a tragic figure who is trying to hold back the tides that he himself did, I think, undeniably have a hand in unleashing, you know?
Yeah.
There's a sense in which, like, if you want to take a very loose view of, like, causality, he did, you know, he assisted in stirring up those waters, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he helped create the culture that created that event, you know.
Exactly. And I think that any kind of person that is a liberal who's on the left is going to immediately say, well, it doesn't matter if he was trying to stop the riots, he had an unmistakable hand in creating them in the first place, which is not the opinion that I share at all, but That is a very beautiful image to me of a man trying to undo what he had wrought.
Yeah.
But it's too late. That is very beautiful.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You should watch it. You should like try and pirate it somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll figure out a way to watch it. Are there any other documentaries that have been out that we should watch? Anything you can think of?
I mean, we should have done the two Intel documentaries that came out back to back way like back in 2020, but we didn't.
Yeah, I know. I feel like if I watch those documentaries, those guys are winning, you know? And I just don't want Kant Bot to win. I don't want him to do it, you know? He is in many ways like, he is one route that I could have gone down in my own life. I could have gained about 75 pounds and just been a pseudo intellectual on the internet. And so that part of me that is embodied in him, I renounce, and I don't want him to succeed. So yeah. So yeah, I am sorry. I have a high resistance to watching those documentaries.
Well, the other one isn't about CompBot. The other one's just about like Pepe. But most people that like followed CompBot in that like internet era, like most people hate him now. He like burned all of his bridges with people. But I don't know. I still kind of like him.
Yeah, well, I mean, so I think that Logo has superseded him, right? He's now the guy.
Yeah, I like Logo a lot better, yeah.
Yeah, I do like him a lot better, but also, like, there are, if you look for them, there are so many just fucking takedowns of, like, he's wrong and lies so often.
Yeah, all the time.
About his knowledge of the German language and, like, fucking, like, all this shit that you really should not lie about because people are going to be able to tell that you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. So, yeah. I have mixed feelings about him.
Yeah, I mean, I just like him because, like, every time I open Twitter on my phone, he's in some sort of, like, he's on something going on. He's in some sort of dispute with, like, a bunch of people. And it's just, like, it's constant, it's constant entertainment for me every time I open Twitter. And it'll be like, you know, day, week long arcs, you know, where he's talking about the same thing and different people keep like coming in to like talk shit or whatever.
I don't know. Yeah, I read this a thread where a guy recommends that he reads this book, and then he's like, oh yeah, I've read that book actually, and he like, this is what he says in the book, and then the guy says, yeah, I made up that book. I made up the title of that book, actually. It doesn't exist. And it's like, that. There is not a bigger L you can possibly fucking take. Like, that is just straight up third grader fucking behavior right there. I do like reading his antics. And he does have a strange way of getting himself involved in, like, big conversations like before they happen or as they happen, like that whole fucking Starbucks barista thing, the whole our baristas proletarian thing, I realized that was happening. He hopped in on that at a time where there was like a larger conversation that was about is transportation like does a thing still have use value before it is transported into where it's going to be used, which was happening in the larger like socialist universe at the same time that he was talking about that. And he kind of deftly moved his dumber argument about our baristas, proletarians, he sort of deftly moved that into that conversation. And I thought it was pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah, and it became like the forefront of that topic.
Like, yeah.
He changed the conversation into what he wanted to talk about, which was funny. There was one like Twitter space he did where like at the very end, like some like lady came on, and some lady that's like in a union and was like really looking forward to like getting in and debating. And it was like the last 5 minutes and he just wanted to like stop it. And he just like spurred the fuck out, just like shouted at her for like 5 minutes until she like shut up. It was pretty, pretty wild.
Great.
Yeah.
Love that.
I hope one day we can hop in on the Twitter space thing and get some vaporwave nerds to come defend a dead genre to us and we can just freak out, just flip the fuck out.
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Let's do it. And yeah, I am sympathetic to Ron Paul communism. I do believe that that's the way to go.
Yeah, Ron Paul's lit.
Hell yeah. Well, all right.
All right, I guess that's it. Thank you for your time. Sayonara.
And sayonara to you.